You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ian, look at this.
Well, it's a police box. What on earth is he doing here? Hey, these things are usually on the street. I feel it. Feel it, you feel it?
It's a faint vibration.
It's alive.
Earth Station Who, a fun mashup celebrating nearly 50 years of Doctor Who universe. Hold tight, you never know where the TARDIS is going next.
Who are you?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that again. Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe. Now please, get off this planet while you still have a choice.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station Who podcast. That's right, folks. We are already on week 5 of Doctor Who. Can you believe that already? 5 episodes down, 5 more to go. Just feels like yesterday we were like going, God, I can't wait for Jodie to start as the Doctor. But yes, we are halfway through and we are going to talk all about the Saranga conundrum. Yes, that's right, folks. This is the episode I'm destined to mispronounce. So it should be a lot of fun to do. So we've got a great crew to talk all about it. Before we introduce them, remember, we are going to be talking all about this episode. So there will be spoilers.
How exciting! Spoilers!
Okay, you have been warned. For our crew this week, we got a great bunch of folks together. Of course, as always, Mr. Mike Gordon is here.
Howdy.
How are you, sir?
I am peachy keen.
You ready to talk about a metal-eating monster?
Yes, I am ready to dive right on in.
It should be interesting to do. And, of course, the lovely Mary Ogle is here.
Hi, everybody. It is great to be here.
It should be very interesting to talk all about the spaceship that is a hospital also. We haven't seen that before, ever.
Ever? No,
never, ever.
Not even in Doctor Who.
Yeah, never, ever, ever. And we also have a guest with us. Let's welcome Mr. Mike Faulkner is here. Welcome, Michael.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me this week.
No, it's always good to have you. You know, it's always nice when you make an appearance up here on the station other than at cons.
Yeah, it's good to be here. So looking forward to talking about this one. It was kind of an interesting episode.
It should be interesting. And, you know, we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you guys thought about this one. All right, let's get started. And we are going to jump in with both feet. Saranga conundrum starts with the Doctor and her companions, or her TARDIS team, searching this junk planet for what? I don't know. And it was like a big metal detector thing. You know, they each were using the spiffed up metal detectors and searching for the Doctor's whatever, you know, and they actually find a sonic mine instead, and ooh, was there hell to pay.
Boom.
Yep. So
good.
Yeah, it was interesting to see because the Doctor was wrong for the zillionth time. And it was interesting to see how Jodie played this off. You know, it was neat to see, and the crew was pretty decent. They were very well rounded in this one. I think they were all, you know, I think Graham was actually the weakest one in this storyline.
I felt like Yaz didn't have anything at all to do during the first half of the episode. I'm not sure she even spoke until halfway through the episode. But then it picked up. I mean, she did pick up the second half. But yeah, it's getting a little tiring. I hope she has more to do as the season goes on.
I think she's the main focus of next week's.
Yeah, I think she is, and I'm looking forward to that.
So it should be interesting to see, you know, the Doctor on, you know, it was basically base under siege type story. The Doctor and companions, you know, stuck somewhere with, you know, no way out and having to deal with an alien life form this time.
Yeah, we got to see them running through corridors.
Exactly. It felt a lot old series that way.
Oh, yeah. It was very old series that way. Even the monster was very old series, not in the good way.
Yeah. But at least you didn't see the zipper in the suit.
No, you just saw bad CGI. I mean, I was not impressed.
Yeah, this was even so much classic that it even got to the point of, you know, how do we separate the team TARDIS from the TARDIS so they don't just hop in and, you know, fly away?
Mm-hmm. They never do show them actually getting back to the TARDIS.
Right.
They make it back.
It was interesting because part of me was thinking, and I don't know if anyone else thought this, that maybe this whole story was in the Doctor's head after the explosion went off or something. That, you know, that it was just an adventure while she was unconscious from the, you know, blast.
I think that was just you.
Okay. I was hoping.
This certainly is not a perfect episode, but it's not without its charm for me. I like the characters. I like the interaction of all the characters. It felt like a play. Like I'd say, like a, you know, sort of, it didn't have to be, you know, obviously set in many rooms. It could have just been set in like one room, really, with all the folks. And I thought they did a really good job with, you know, we've talked about it before. Chibnall does a really good job with characters. And I think that's a highlight here, not so much some of the other stuff. And, you know, I think even though I didn't hate this episode, I'm going to go on record, and I think I've already done this, but I must admit, when I saw the initial credits and it said written by Chris Chibnall, I was like, again? I was like, could you just, like, we kept hearing about how there was going to be all these different writers this year, all this like whole slew of writers. And I'm like, so far it's just Chris and just one exception to that. And even that was co-written by Chris. And I'm like, when are we going to get some new visions? I'm sort of, I don't hate what I'm seeing, but I would kind of like to see something else a little bit, you know?
But this was to me the most Chris Chibnall episode of all the episodes. And I mean, that was for good and bad. The plot was terrible, but I mean, he's that's not his strong point. Let's face it.
Yeah. He's really focusing a lot on simplicity of plot, but really more character development.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we are getting new writers after this. I think like the next four episodes, I think, are written by different people. And that's good. I think we need to see some new voices.
Yeah, it might have even been better if they had kind of spaced it out where maybe this one was later in the season, you know, like just to have like all these like Chris Chibnall episodes, bam, 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 one after another. I mean, I get it. He's setting the tone. I think he's setting the tone for the show. You know, he's delving into the characters a bit. And I still like the companions a lot, despite the fact that, you know, they don't do a lot here. I still like the interaction between them. And you know, Graham is still my favorite, but I don't hate the others by any means. I don't think there's a bad one in the bunch.
The companions this season to me have felt more real than most of the companions have it throughout the new, you know, the revival of Doctor Who. You know, these ones feel more relatable to me. I see the character moments. I see them, you know, back and forth and having what seemed like real world type discussions. They're talking about each other. They're learning about each other. They're having their conflicts and getting used to being out there, especially with the family relationship between Ryan and Graham. And it's something that I'm glad to see, although I really do wish that they would bring in a bit more of the depth of story that we saw in previous years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. The characters do feel more relatable. But that's Chibnall. He writes those type of characters. But the depth of the stories are what's missing. It's always like, it's almost like having some candy. You like the story while you're watching it, but then afterwards it has like a weird aftertaste to it.
That's a good way to put it. I mean, this one, it was fun to watch, but it just felt very hollow at the end. I mean, it just didn't, there wasn't a lot of depth to it. And I actually felt like he had too many characters, and so he was spreading himself thin. And so they did not get developed as well as they might have. I don't think the Mpreg guy was necessary at all. And this is nothing against Mpreg. I mean, I've read some really good fan fictions, but he didn't need to be there. He didn't really add to the story. He was just kind of a gimmick, which is too bad because you could have explored that in an interesting way, but he didn't do that. I felt, and I didn't even, it was hard for me to care about the pilot and her brother, even though I think he was trying hard to get us to care about them, but they just didn't have the depth they needed.
No, I didn't. Out of everyone, I thought those two were the least caring about. I cared more for the pregnant man and the people who were the two doctors on the ship more than I cared for the android and the brother and sister. Yeah, they just didn't do anything.
I cared more for the staff of the ship than anybody else.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Well, they were developed more. I mean, I think it might, even if you had just had the staff without the other characters, I think you might have been better off. I think you may have been able to explore that dynamic better and develop a better story around them. It was almost like Chris was trying to, he had these things he wanted to do, and he just checked them off as he went along. But it never, it didn't hold together as a coherent story, at least not a good story.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I felt like the pregnant man was a bit more of a, I guess, comic relief in a sense. And then I could almost see through it. And then at the very end, I realized exactly what he was there for. It was, kind of release some of the tension that's going on with this base or ship under siege, but also it's a vehicle for the continued development of Ryan and Graham. And it didn't hit me until the fist bump, because they were back and forth, kind of bantering. It was nice. But then the fist bump moment, and my wife looked at me and she says, "Hey, what was that? Is he saying that Graham is too old to do that? It's just not a dad or granddad thing to do." And I'm like, I think it's more of a, he hasn't earned that right yet. He's not, they're not comfortable enough in that relationship to have that kind of expressive moment.
No, I agree. I think exactly where they were going with it. They weren't there yet.
I did like kind of the fact that it was like there was a sort of, flip on what's usually the case, whether it's a pregnant woman on board with this thing going on, and then two women are going to care for her. You've got the two guys, and you've got this very like sort of action oriented show, because you've got this alien creature on there that needs to be stopped. And so you'd think, okay, right, the guys are going to like gear up and go take care of this thing. And it's called Pating, right? But I think we'll just call him Stitch, right?
I had the same thought.
So Stitch is going all over the ship. So you'd think, okay, the guys are going to man up and take care of it, but they don't do that. Like the way the script works, and you don't feel it in your face that that's what's happening here, which I kind of like. Like it feels really organic that the roles are switched here in a way that I think is it gives a little bit too much credit, because the story's not that deep, but yet it's still happening. Like, and I have to give credit for that. Like the transition isn't in your face. Like, hey, look what I'm doing.
Yeah,
exactly.
General too. I mean, he makes the general woman.
Yes, and exactly. Right.
The brother is more of a secondary character to her.
And I think we're at the point now where, unfortunately, they don't feel the need to kind of give us any more. Like, they're just like, okay, android, that's all you need to know. He's an android. And they leave it at that. Like, it's just like, it's almost like Chris is taking shortcuts. Like, it's like, oh, all you need to know is that asteroids, all you need to know. Like, he doesn't really do a good job, I think, in this episode and maybe some of the others, at kind of explaining some of the things that are going on to people who might not be familiar with these kind of scenarios. It's just like, oh no, everybody understands all this.
Yeah, already. I kind of wonder if it's an overcompensation for the last, you know, the last number of years where the Doctor became almost a superhero. You know, all the scripts and everything were always so outlandish and always trying to outdo each other, even to the point where we had to reset the universe and erase the Doctor's history so that people wouldn't know who the Doctor was, you know, Doctor Who being the first question. And I wonder if it's just an overcompensation that's gone a little too far, where we're too simplistic now. I mean, I enjoy the simplistic stories. I, you know, have even through the classic years, but these seem just like you said, they're shortcuts.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I don't mind simple stories, but taking shortcuts, then you might, I mean, then that's a true way that you're not going to get in too in depth with them. You know?
I think this is a problem with a lot of Chibnall's stories. He does better in episodic dramas where he has more time to develop these things. When he tries to put that into an hour long episode, it just doesn't work because he doesn't have the time to develop anything. And he overreaches and he starts taking shortcuts. And then it just kind of becomes a mess. And I think that really this me was the weakest episode by far. And the most like some of the previous episodes of Chris's that I've seen, that, you know, it's not that they're horrible or anything, but they don't quite work. They don't quite hold together.
Yeah, I didn't think it was as huge of a drop as you, because I didn't feel like story-wise it was much different than last week's. The only difference was we didn't have, like, you know, an amazing actor like come in and like really take over, like some of the, like if they had gotten somebody a little bit more charismatic to play the general, then that might have saved this episode a little bit more. I mean, I don't mean to rag on them, they're all competent and they did their jobs, but you know, there's a difference between, like, you know, having, if you're gonna have this sort of simplistic story, you need the actors to kind of almost in some ways, like, you know, do like over the top, like Chris Knott did last week, you know?
No, agreed. And, you know, I don't think we got that this week by any means. It was interesting because when I was watching it and, you know, when they had the scene when Yaz and the android were left to defend the antimatter, and it was interesting because I turned to Judy and I was like, bet you 10 to 1 the android bites it because he's not organic matter. And, you know, was sorely disappointed on that.
Yeah, that actually was a golden opportunity.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. That's like foreshadowing that doesn't pay off, right? You've got right. The one guy who can actually touch it or whatever, and he never, like, even comes close. Like,
no, not at all.
Android.
Yeah, instead she grabs it and then kicks it down the hall. And I'm like, really? Like, couldn't? Like, that was a time where I was like, okay, this is, now we're getting to the point where it's dumb. Because I'm like, there should be a more permanent solution than just kicking it down the hall and hoping for the best. It's like, no, shut it in an airlock, get rid of it. Nope, can't, you know, that seemed like it was kind of pretty weak. And and I also thought, too, I was really curious because, you know, she was setting, it seemed like she was setting up the creature, Stitch, to die, you know, to eat the bomb or to swallow the bomb and get blown up. Like, she knew that it was going, that it could absorb, or, you know, figured it could absorb the blast, but that was a pretty big gamble for the rest of us that we didn't know. And I'm like, well, what, she's just killing this thing off? Like, she wasn't going to kill off the spiders? And that seemed really inconsistent. And then, you know, she does actually, you know, the creature does live and it's fine because it can live in space because they've told us that before. So everything's okay. Like, as far as her not killing anybody,
except the creature is just going to latch on to the next spaceship, and
well, yeah, there exactly. Is.
Well, the doctor did say that the creature was going to be is very well fed for quite some time now with all the energy absorbed from the bomb.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well, that's good until you're the spaceship that comes along after it's done absorbing the energy.
Details.
I mean, honestly, it's a very classic series conclusion, though. Like, it, you know, it's just pass the buck all the time. Like, ah, somebody else will deal with that. We got something else to do.
And once again, the Doctor doesn't finish it off. You know, this is every episode so far this season, the Doctor has left loose ends. This a little bit less than the other ones, but still, that creature could turn up again, once again.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, they didn't do, I don't think they did anything in this episode that I think is going to pay off later. Like, there's no, you know, I think we, in the first few episodes, we kind of mentioned some stuff that we thought were going to bring up, like, sort of like, you know, not as maybe as obvious as like the crack or anything or Bad Wolf, but yet, you know, I think we saw some things in the first couple episodes, the same, that race that they mentioned over and over. Now, I don't think there was anything in this that seemed relevant to anything else. So I don't expect to see anything here again, but who knows? I mean, maybe she'll get into a situation, jumps in her TARDIS and then comes back and unleashes Stitch on somebody. I don't know. Like, I mean, it's possible that we could see Stitch again. And I'm going to keep saying that till we get sued by Disney.
Like anyone at Disney even listens to us.
I was hoping there was going to be a play it forward kind of moment in this episode. I have been very critical over the last few episodes of this season about the use of the sonic screwdriver. You know, because I feel like it has been really overused. I'm glad it's back as kind of a scientific instrument, not just a magic wand. But then there's other instances like, you know, I think it's the second episode with the Ghost Monument where she opened a hand wheel hatch with the sonic from a distance. I was like, we got to stop this. So when Stitch actually ate the sonic and spat it back out and it wasn't working, I was like, oh, thank you. This is a Fifth Doctor moment. We are disabling the sonic for a period. And then it came back. I was like, well, I guess not.
Yeah, it was gone for about 10 minutes. And that was
right.
I like that. I did like that, though. I mean, it kind of set up, though, the whole premise that it fed on energy and that it also sped it up because isn't there biological elements to her sonic as well? Is that why it sped it out too?
Might be the crystals or whatever it was that,
Yeah, I think I thought she said something about this sonic is bio engineered or something.
I think that was the crystals, like Mike said.
Yeah.
Because it was just interesting that, you know, it actually magically self-repaired itself and came back to life. And it's like, almost like, you know, I loved it when in the, you know, last Doctor, you know, he gave the sonic screwdriver to Davros. And he didn't have anything for about an episode or two. And then he came up with his wonderful sonic sunglasses.
Yeah, I mean, it would have helped to raise the stakes to just get rid of the sonic or at least the episode. I mean, he kept sort of starting to do things like that. I mean, Chibnall kept starting to do things like that and then not following through. And
so, I don't think it did anything though, after it came back that they couldn't have written without it.
Yeah. But I think if you know that, okay, I don't have this thing throughout the whole episode, then it just raises the stakes because you know you can't use that as a way to get out of things. I mean, it's not there at all. The implication isn't even there. I mean, it was a very superficial episode to me. And I'm not saying things can't be light and funny and, you know, everything doesn't have to be deep and profound and have some big message to it. Not at all. But it just, I don't know, it was kind of clunky.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, it's clunky and it's not that deep. You know, like I said, I liked the companions in this. I like the interaction that they have. I'm still on board with that. And, you know, I mean, we say it so much that it seems like almost redundant, but I just have to point out that Jodie continues to be amazing. Like, absolutely amazing. Like, she, as Mike pointed out, I'm still waiting for like a big Doctor moment from her, but she is the Doctor. There's no question in my mind that she's the Doctor. I just haven't seen a very like powerful, like, I am the Doctor scene yet, you know?
Yeah, she's playing it very understated, almost like Peter Davidson did.
Yeah, it's almost like she feels like her character is still cooking. I mean, she keeps referring to the fact that she's not all there yet. And so, you know, I'm kind of like, well, hopefully you'll get there soon.
I think that has something to do with Chibnall's writing too, because he doesn't tend to build to those big moments in the way that Moffat did.
Mm-mm, or anybody.
Exactly.
Done. Yeah.
I mean, RTD was just as guilty of it as well. And this sort of felt like more of an RTD era type episode. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just, you know, not a farting aliens way, but I mean,
oh, like, thank God.
Well, like there was a point where I thought, you know, Stitch, I mean, we did get a butt shot. So
we did, we got mooned.
We did get a Stitch moon.
It was, you know, it was interesting too, because there was no communicating with this creature, and the doctor usually understands most creatures it meets, any languages and such. And I guess this is just a feeding machine, just looking for energy.
Yeah. And she did.
It would have been kind of interesting if they had mentioned a little bit more about, you know, if we could have found out a little bit more about it, like, because I think they alluded to the fact that they didn't know if it was like, you know, artificially created or if it came out, you know, organically or what, how this thing, you know,
they
came to be.
Just said, well, this thing shows up and there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Right. Right.
Physically tell everybody.
And the captain actually knew of this creature.
Yep.
And she's faced it before. So it's craziness. And, you know, to me, this is not going to go down as one of my favorite episodes of the season. I don't think there was really much memorable about it, except for Graham's face when he saw the inside of the guy when the baby was being born. And as of being someone who was in the delivery room when their partner was giving birth, you know, it was definitely... Oh, I had very many flashbacks to that. And it is something I really don't ever want to relive ever again.
The miracle of life.
Oh, no. Don't let me look inside her belly. Oh, no, no. Cannot do that. So, yuck. But, you know, it was, you know, that the whole thing with the male being pregnant and everything. For me, that the main reference I have for that is Red Dwarf when Lister was pregnant. And even though they really didn't show it on the show, they just did it as, you know, a random picture. And then later they, you know, did it in the scroll that he gave birth and, you know, sent the children off to an alternate, you know, universe and such. It's because they were aging too fast. Red Dwarf fans will get it. It's okay. But it was just like, that was, you know, that was just filler, I felt like, for the show.
Well, it's obvious to me that Chris doesn't, have, you know, like that sort of, he's not out to tell these outrageously crazy stories, you know. He's keeping things very simple, very straightforward, not a lot of depth. You know, I mean, it's a little different. It's a, you know, I think we've been trying to put our finger on it this season. It's at least certainly I have. And I think that's, you know, I enjoy the ride, but like you suggested, Mike, it's one of those things too, where it's like after the ride's over, you know, I'm kind of like, okay, now I can just do whatever. I'm not really jonesing to get back on the roller coaster again.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, who was the one, you know, there's still a whole storyline at the very beginning, like I brought up at the beginning of this episode. Why were they searching for stuff on this junk planet? You know, what were they doing there? And, you know, it sounds like, you know, at least that they're having adventures between the episodes. Yeah. So that's fodder for Big Finish right there.
Yeah, I caught that too.
So it was just, it was neat to see that, but it just looks like, okay, that was another no explain. Let's just have the Doctor and her TARDIS crew going through the metal detectors. Let's waste time, you know?
Yeah, I was waiting for Wally to show up.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
That's what it reminded me of.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have been a more interesting episode.
Only one Disney character is allowed to be ripped off at a time in an episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah, touche there. Touche. You know, like everyone's been saying, Jodie was awesome. And I loved how, you know, the Doctor was all disoriented at the beginning of, you know, when she woke up in the hospital ship. And it took her a while to get up and get moving and everything, where we're usually used to when the Doctor is knocked unconscious and then he in the past woke up, he was like, okay, let's get going, you know, that type of thing. You didn't have that in this episode.
Well, that was actually an interesting idea, I thought, having an injured Doctor. I'm not sure that it was written all that effectively. I think he could have done more with it, but that would be an interesting idea to explore.
And the other thing I noticed also, like with Jodie in this, do you notice she shielded Yaz when she thought the bomb was going to explode? Like to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's
she didn't she didn't go behind her companion?
Yeah, it didn't
hide behind her. She's a companion like a...
Yeah, she didn't do a Colin Baker.
This is what I keep you guys around for, Perry.
I can't get my multicolored outfit, you know, spotted or anything.
Yeah, I did enjoy that just sounds so wrong to say it, but I did enjoy having the Doctor injured for a bit, you know, not being at full capacity. And I'm actually really enjoying this time around, this whole series, the Doctor not being the smartest person in the room, you know, not having all the answers. I'm really liking the fact that Jodie's Doctor is figuring this out as everyone else is figuring it out at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't know all every alien creature they meet or certain areas of space.
Yeah, because the biggest complaint I had, well, one of the biggest complaints I had about the Matt Smith era was that a lot of the things got resolved with, you know, we're trying to figure out the mystery, everybody else is trying to figure out the mystery, and the Doctor's got the answer in at that time his back pocket and just pulls it out like, and this card is now laid and the whole thing's solved. It's like, that's not fun. That's not entertaining.
Yeah, that's very Sylvester McCoy to do stuff like that. But yeah, I like mm-hmm. too that she's more of an explorer. She's more figuring it out as she goes along, and that's fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Especially since Jodie's so good at it. I mean, we are. I think these, like especially this episode, I think would be a lot less without Jodie, because she just really sells it, no matter what she's given.
Also, and this is just a weird little nitpick, but I have to say, I think the episode also suffers a little bit because whoever designed, particularly the costumes, it just seems like they did not even go to like costume 101 class or something, because they've got very similar people with similar complexions wearing the exact same colors, and it's just like, so it takes you a minute to be like, who is this that I'm watching again? Like it takes you, it's not really simple. Like if you're going to tell simple stories like this, it doesn't take much to like, you know, dress people a little bit differently.
Yeah. Just the episode where they ran out of money. costumes.
I'll agree with you there on the costuming. It kind of pulled me out of the story for a good couple of minutes when I took a good long look at the brother, yeah. and I realized that he is just wearing blue jeans that have holes in them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
well, it's so good to know dungarees have made it to the 67th century.
But between the brother and, you know, Ryan kind of dressed similarly. And then I thought the female doctor and the general were kind of all dressed like, you know, they're short in stature, dark hair. They're all dressed in white. And I was just kind of like, just like there's other colors. You people can use these other colors. I mean, you know, Graham's walking around in this like baby blue like shirt that it's like, hey, I stand out on everybody. Like, pay attention to me. And of course, the doctor's still rocking her outfit. You know, I wasn't completely like over the moon over it when I first saw it. It's one of those things that I'm just sort of accepting. I can't say I still love it, but it works for her. Particularly, I think the boots. For some reason, I just think the boots are like more than anything else that she's wearing are so her.
I kind of love her costume. I really do, and I love that they made it that it would. I mean, it's something that makes sense for her to wear in that she can move around in it, buy it. She's, it's just it, with female doctor, they could have really gone the wrong way.
Yeah, I don't think you're ever going to see, I doubt you will ever see Jody in a skirt playing the doctor. Yeah, I just don't think that's ever going to happen.
Never say never, my friend.
But I guess I'm not a big fan of, you know, what do they call it? Like sort of capri pants where they just sort of end like below the knee. I'm like, I'm just not a fan of those at all.
Hey, we lived through the 80s. We remember those.
I know. I didn't like them then. And I still don't. Yeah. They're awful carryovers. Like, so, you know, the color scheme and everything or jacket and everything, those are fine. But yeah. I don't care for those. I've never been a big fan.
Oh, I am loving that jacket and the fact that the doctor has pockets and those pockets are full of just random items again.
Yeah.
And the hood works for her too in the jacket. I think she's used that to pretty good effect too.
Mm-hmm. Although we have been asking the question on this side of the microphone. We keep going back and forth on just how many of those rainbow shirts she purchased. Because she's got a different color every week.
Hey, you know, at least you know this doctor changes her clothes.
This is true.
She does laundry.
You know, because, you know, hey, bow ties are cool, but they do smell after a while. Oh, sorry about that. Okay. But it was interesting because the story could have been much deeper and also in some ways much darker, but it felt like fluff in a lot of ways.
Yes.
Yes. I think he was going for fluff, but I still think he could have done a better job at the fluff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, you could have had some real fun with this, you know? I mean, look, if, you know, I'll bring up, you know, if you're going to go big, right? So like, for example, if Douglas and Adams had written this same script, it would have been hilarious. You know, you could have had the pregnant man and it would have just been amazingly satirical and amazingly funny. And you could have worked out a lot of other funny things to do with this, but it's not to that level at all.
No, agreed.
You can't carry off satire in that way. I don't think.
Who, Chris? No.
Yeah.
not if that's what he was going for here. There's very little camp in this episode, and it probably could have used at least a little tinge of camp.
No, agreed. It was camp is always good, and there was a lot they could have been very campy about in this storyline.
Yeah, I mean, you've got this like, you know, CG monster running around looking, you know, like, you know, the BBC is going to merchandise the heck out of it. They're like, oh, this is our next adipose or whatever, you know, like, this is going to be fun. But, so yeah, you could have had a lot of fun with it, but it just kind of fell flat.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. It was interesting because the control room in this almost had, you know, with the center console and everything, had a TARDIS feel to it a little bit. It didn't have the up and down thing, but it had the console in the center and such. And I was like thinking to myself, God, I like this much better than the new TARDIS. But, you know, beggars can't be choosers, as I like to say.
Well, at least we didn't see the interior of the TARDIS in this one.
That's true. That is true. So, you know, I don't know how much more we could talk about in this episode because, you know, we're just, you know, let's nitpick it if we want. But do you guys have any final thoughts before we go ahead and rate this one?
I did see some interesting trivia floating around the internet. Somebody actually kind of slowed down the sequence where they're bringing up the file on the Stitch character. Apparently as they're flipping through the library, it moves really fast, so you can't really see it at normal speed. But if you slow it down, there's images of a Cyberman, an Ood, a Weeping Angel, a Sontaran, a Silent, a Silurian, and a Saigon that pop up in there before Stitch appears.
Really?
Yeah. I
have to go back and look at that.
They all are
preferable to this character. If they're ranked, then yes, I can see what
he was the last one on the totem pole.
I loved when the doctor said, oh, the 67th century starts strong, goes a little haywire, but you end really good. And so just like, oh, time travelers. Gotta love them. All right, let's go ahead and rate this 1 out of 5 TARDISes, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. Michael, you got to go first.
You know, I was fairly critical of this one throughout our discussion, and I want to reinforce that I'm only critical because I still really love the franchise. I had a lot of fun with this episode. It was really simplistic. It was kind of shallow, but it was enjoyable enough that, yeah, I still want to keep watching this season and still keep tuned in. Especially for the companion moments, the character moments, the doctor, that kind of stuff is really driving me week to week. So I think when it comes down to it, I land around a 3.75.
Okay, that's fair. All right, Mike Gordon.
I'm along the same lines. I think I enjoyed this one more than, I know I enjoyed it more than Mary. Not that that's a contest. There's nothing in here that made me like really like upset with the franchise. There's nothing in here that was like, oh geez. I mean, I could watch this one. It's just sort of, as we've alluded to, this just sort of light, you know, comedic points. But the characters on there are fun to watch, I think. And, I give it a 3.5.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, Mary.
Yeah, this one was middle of the season, middle of the road. It's not awful, but it's not great. It still was fun to watch. The Pating was just silly. It kind of looked like a Star Wars porg that had too many steroids to me. The CGI really failed us there, though I did kind of like it eating the inorganic material. But it, yeah. It's not the first time a monster's failed us on Doctor Who, but it just, you know, it was an okay episode. So I think I'm probably, you know, kind of go in the middle here and give it a 3.
Okay. For me, you know, I care about it, and Doctor Who this season is still better than some of the Moffat episodes we had. And storylines. Don't get me started on Sleep No More. Come on, we're not even going to go there. You know, and so I've enjoyed it. I'm going to give this one probably, I'll give it a 3 also. I enjoyed it, and Jodie, as always, saved it from much. I still am starting to think 3 companions is 1 too many. And, kind of sad to hear that and think that, but you know, I wonder which one of these characters has to go. And you know, I like each one of them for different reasons, and I'm hoping next week's episode will have Yaz finally shine, you know. And so we'll have to wait and see. We want to hear from you guys at home though. Please write us at eswpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought. Did you like it? Did you not? Did you like Stitch? You know, do you want to see that character back? You know, not that it's really a character, but do you want to see, you know, what do you want to see? Please let us know about that. Let's wrap this one up and thank our guests for being here. Of course, Michael, you made it.
Yeah, I did. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Always great to have you. You want to promote anything?
Yeah, the timestamps project on my blog, Creative Criticality, it is still rolling. I have been watching Doctor Who from the very beginning of the franchise and working my way through week to week for about 4.5 years now. And I'm into the 9th Doctor's era. I'm back where I started when I first...
Welcome to New Who.
That's right. I just published The Long Game today, and next week will be Father's Day. So I'm kind of right in the middle of that 9th Doctor era. If you want to catch up on the new stuff I'm working on, or even go back and start at the very beginning and read what I've done, that's at creativecriticality.net.
At least you made it past the farting aliens, so it's okay. All right. Mary, as always, thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always fun to get together and talk about Doctor Who. And I always say, even bad or middle of the road, Doctor Who is better than about 99% of most of what else is out there. So, and this episode was still enjoyable.
Awesome. And where can they find your work?
They can find my artwork at maryogle.com or on Etsy at eVision Art.
Fantastic. And Mr. Mike?
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you want to shout out about or promote?
Well, I do, and in addition to all the other crazy stuff we do for folks who are into Doctor Who, I did cross the streams, actually crossed over the hall in the station, and hung out with the Watchathon of Rassilon folks, Joe and Tony over there, and myself and Nathan Laws. We all four of us sat down and reviewed The Talons of Wang Chang, and that's. It's one of my favorite stories. Of course, we've done it on ESW before, and it's a great story that's worth. I never get tired of talking about it, so we talk about it for quite some time because we. I don't know if anybody's listened to that show, but we go like they go into each episode by episode by episode of our story, and I think Talons is a 6-parter. So. Yeah, we spent a little bit of time talking all about it, but it was a lot of fun, and hopefully people will enjoy listening to it.
That is awesome. You know, it's always great when we get to guest on other podcasts, and, you know, it's a great variety, and that's one of the great things about the ESO Network. And, you know, it's always fun. You know, we've got 27 amazing shows up here. You know, check them out. Check them out on iTunes. Check them out on Stitcher Radio. Or Android, or whatever player you might have. Pretty much all of the ESO Network stuff is up there. And especially now, because there is an ESO Network feed that you could just look up ESO Network and listen to all our shows all in one place. It's pretty darn awesome that we make that available to you. So please, definitely, you know, take part in our Facebook group. We got a great Earth Station Who Facebook group and talk all about different Doctor Who stuff, jokes and news stories. And, you know, talk about the comics, you know, all different types of things. And, you know, to Mike's detriment, we even talk a little bit about Doctor Who rumors. Sorry, dude. But, you know, it's always great. But, you know, speaking of great, we will be back again next week when we are going to be looking at the Demons of the Punjab. It should be a lot of fun. And, you know, maybe we'll get a Yaz featured story that we actually cheer her on and go, that's why she's on the TARDIS. Okay.
Now, I'd just settle for an episode that's not written by Chris Tribnell.
Nope, it's exactly.
Not. This next one is not.
Nope. Vinjay Patel is actually writing this one.
Oh, that could be one of those things where, like, be careful what you wish for, right?
Exactly. And with all that being said, we are out of here. We will see you again next week on Earth Station Who. Peace. And we're done.
You have been listening to Earth Station Who, a bi-weekly pop culture podcast dedicated to all things Doctor Who, featuring talents from across the universe. All topics on the show are the sole opinions of the individual and are used for entertainment value alone. You can subscribe to our podcast up on iTunes, Stitcher, or follow our blog at www.esopodcast.com. You can also follow us up on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. If you enjoyed the show, please leave feedback up on iTunes.
Yes, yes. Yes, hello. Let's talk about the Flopcast.
Every week, we give podcast listeners a chance to come and join us in Chickentown,
where we talk about Saturday morning cartoons, comics and science fiction conventions, music and concert reports, 70s and 80s pop culture, and for no good reason, chickens.
Boy, we're weird.
Oh, we are ridiculous.
We're proud members of the ESO Network, and you can find us at flopcast.net.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.